When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go paper-tarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from howstuffworks.com.
Scott, welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you as well.
Yep. And for everyone who hasn't caught earlier episodes, let's introduce ourselves.
Why not?
All right.
I'm Scott Benjamin. I'm the auto editor here at How Stuff Works, and you are?
My name is Ben, and I'm kind of the sidekick who asks you questions.
Fantastic.
About cars.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, and let's go ahead and maybe let's try this out. We talk about a lot of different types of cars. We've just gone nuts on some stuff. Flying cars is still always going to be a little bit of a disagreement between us, but I understand where you're coming from.
Sure.
So I was thinking maybe we could build a bridge back. We could maybe talk about something that we both are pretty big fans of.
Sure.
Muscle cars.
Oh, yeah.
You remember muscle cars?
Yeah, I do. I'm from Michigan, Detroit, so muscle cars are all over the place up there. I just went back a couple weeks ago, and I was shocked by how many I saw, just because I had been here for a while.
Sure.
Forgot kind of what it was like up there, because that's the weekend car for everybody up there. So I was there on a weekend, and Friday evening, sure enough, the roads were not packed with them, but pretty close.
What kinds were you seeing?
Oh, everything. I mean, anything you can imagine that came from the big three in that time frame, you saw.
Wow.
And I'd love to list them, but there's so many. And honestly, they park in groups. It's kind of like cruise night. You've been to cruise nights, or you've seen cruise nights?
Yeah, definitely.
It's like that I happen to live right near the Woodward area in Detroit. And that road, of course, the Woodward Dream Cruise, and it's really an all-year event now. It's crazy. I mean, there are people sitting in lawn chairs on the side of the road just to watch traffic every Friday and Saturday night, even now. And
wow.
I don't think the Dream Cruise happens until August or
maybe
something like that.
Maybe they're just trying to get a good seat.
Maybe. Funny as it sounds, people get excited about it this early, and it's intense up there. It's intensified, I should say.
Well, I had an ulterior motive when I asked which muscle cars you were seeing, because, what I was really trying to get at, what exactly are muscle cars, Scott? Because I'm hearing some different things.
Well, okay. There's probably a good reason you're hearing different things, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But really, generally accepted, muscle cars are really big, powerful, fast cars with big engines. They're usually loud. These are from, it's exactly what you think of. They're the Detroit muscle cars, a lot of steel.
Mm-hmm.
Two doors, four doors. They hold more than two people. But just big engines, fast cars. You can pretty much pick them out of the crowd.
Yeah.
I would think that, just your general knowledge of what a muscle car is, you'd probably be able to spot one here or there.
Okay, but these are not being built anymore, right?
No, that's right.
Okay, when were they built?
Okay, here's
Oh, is this where we go to the plot twist?
Yeah, this is a plot twist. And you know what? Before we get into that, and I'm sorry to cut you off here, but we're going to go back just for 1 second because there's a strict definition of muscle car. And this strict definition comes from muscle car. Let's see, what is it? MuscleCarClub.com. So okay. I'm reading this directly from the MuscleCar.com page.
Okay.
Let's see. A muscle car, by the strictest definition, is an intermediate-sized, performance-oriented model powered by a large V8 at an affordable price. Now remember that, affordable price, okay?
Okay.
Most of these models are based on regular production vehicles, and the vehicles are generally not considered muscle cars, even when equipped with large V8s. If there's a high-performance version available, it gets the credit and not the vehicle that it was based on. That, you know, that's confusing to hear all that at one time. They also, on, you know, the MuscleCarClub.com site, have a list of cars, and this is a pretty interesting list, really, of vehicles that, you know, most people associate with being muscle cars. Several of the cars on the list, turns out, according to that strict definition, do not fit the muscle car definition, I guess.
Because they're too expensive, maybe?
Well, they're too expensive, or... Maybe they were a little too plush. They had too many features. They're more of a luxury vehicle.
Uh-huh.
They cost too much because you know we said that they have to be affordable. In other cases, maybe it was that they just didn't offer the right engine. It wasn't
the V8.
Yeah, that's right. That's one. Just expensive, luxurious cars didn't often count as muscle cars. Now you know, looking back, what do we consider expensive and luxurious wasn't what they considered. Expensive and luxurious back then, but well, maybe it was proportional. I'm not sure exactly. But there's this real tricky definition that they have to fit. And so this list is pretty complete, you know, of what it does include and does not include. And I think you'd be surprised by a few of them that were taken off of the list that don't fit. Like the Oldsmobile Cutlass is not considered a muscle car.
Why not?
Because only the 442 models were considered
okay.
a muscle car. Now, the Plymouth Barracuda, not a muscle car.
Are you serious?
No.
Plymouth is just striking out here.
Because only the Cuda models were considered the muscle car. So there's a separate Cuda model. The Pontiac Grand Prix, not a muscle car because it's too expensive.
Okay.
So, I mean, even though it fit every other parameter, it was too expensive. There's just a long list of these things, and I think people should check that out maybe.
That sounds
interesting because that'll give you, a strict definition of what it is. Now, a lot of people will argue with everything that we have to say today because that's just the way this works. I know that there's going to be a lot of different viewpoints, and we're even saying that right up front that, you know, that even... You got into a question where you asked about when were they built?
Time period, yeah.
Yeah, the time period. Here's how, you know, widely disputed the time period is. It ranges from, get this, 1949 all the way to 1978. Depends on who you talk to and everything in between. I've seen 1960 to 1971. I've seen 1964 to 1972, 1960 to 1978, 1949 to 1971, and everything in between.
Wow.
It really depends on who you talk to. And no one can seem to agree on what the first muscle car was and what the last muscle car was either. But there are a few opinions about it. But, you know, these range from, you know, the late 40s up to the early 60s for the first muscle car. So that's a pretty wide span of time. And the last one, it can go as late as 1974, but some people disagree with that because... You know, they say that the era was over in 1971.
That's really interesting. So it sounds like what we've got going on here is a disclaimer to any of our listeners who have particular convictions about the muscle cars. We're presenting some general opinions that may differ from source to source.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, and we're just trying to again just generalize just to get the idea of the muscle car out there and let people know what they are, basically.
Yeah, and what are some examples of just something that's like a classic muscle car?
Okay, well, there are a few different classes of muscle car, and I'll get a few examples of those if you like.
That's awesome.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, there's a full-size muscle car, and again, these are coming from that list that I had, the Muscle Car Club.
Oh, yeah, MuscleCarClub.com.
But I've heard of these classes before. There's a full-size muscle car, and one example that they use is the Chevy Impala SS. That's a big car. Huge engine. Intermediate muscle car, Chevelle SS. There's a compact muscle car, which it's a Chevy Nova. If you know the Chevy Nova,
the Chevy Nova is a muscle
car. It was considered, yeah, and it was considered a compact car. Can you believe that? I mean, looking back now, you know what compact car is now. Compact car now is really small. We have, you know, we have micro cars now.
Right.
You know, it's not a little hatchback. This is the Chevy Nova. That was a compact. And another one was the Dodge Dart. And my family had a Dodge Dart, actually. That was our first brand new vehicle.
You mentioned that before, yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, was it a good car?
It was a good car, yeah. We had, it was the first car that we bought brand new. Of course, I was real little.
Yeah, I was about to say, you weren't driving it.
It was like a 1974, I think. It wasn't the big engine. It wasn't a muscle car. Mm-hmm. It had the smaller six-cylinder engine.
Okay.
And it was blue. We took it on a family trip to Minnesota for a fishing trip, you know, just camping, fishing, that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
And we got involved in this hailstorm that the hail was like golf ball size or bigger. And
I got to stop you real quick.
Yeah.
I love that you say we got involved with the hailstorm.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was a drug deal gone bad or something.
I didn't know it sounded that funny, but yeah, I guess we were struck with a hailstorm while we were there, while we were at the cabin. So, you know, we're parked there at the cabin with the lake and everything. It was picturesque, beautiful. This hailstorm comes up. Every single top surface of our brand-new car was dented and dinged. Now, our windows did not break, which was amazing because we've got photos of, you know, us holding this hail that looks like golf balls. They're huge.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it would have hurt somebody if you were out in it. It was that big. But every single surface of that car was pockmarked with hail marks. Hailstone marks.
Yeah.
Terrible. Anyways, okay, way off topic. There were specialty muscle cars. Dodge Daytona is a good example of that. You know, the one with the, well, they also had the Superbird, which was the kind with the big wing on the back, the pointed front end.
That's the one I was thinking about.
That's it. And there was also a pony car.
You mentioned these, but I'm still not clear on what pony cars are.
Strange name, isn't it?
It's a weird name.
Okay, strange. Pony car is just a small body car with a large engine. So an example of pony car, now again, small body, you wouldn't think of the old Chevy Camaro as being a small body, but the old Chevy Camaro was a small body for the time.
Wow.
I know. And another one would be the Dodge Challenger, the original Dodge Challenger, not the one that's out now.
Yeah.
The original Dodge Challenger was also considered a pony car.
Which is bigger than the current Dodge Challenger, is it? No?
I thought, yeah, it might be. Yeah, I believe it was. I believe it is.
So
I believe it is.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the different classes of muscle cars. And I don't know. There's examples of all of these. I mean, again, there were cars that were just stripped down to nothing. You know, the lightweight was great. I mean, that was what they wanted. They wanted lightweight, mm-hmm. affordable. So cars that were stripped of options, cars that were not as plush inside as other vehicles, those were the ones that were, you know, coveted at the time as being, you know, the fast, you know, just go fast cars, really. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, what I was going to ask with these different types we've named again, you know, from the intermediate and the compact and the specialty and so on, and pony cars, all of these types are accepted types of muscle cars, right? There's no controversy that says a pony car is not a muscle car.
Yes, there is. There's controversy about all of this. Everything. There are pony cars on this list that I've got here that are not muscle cars. Let me see if I can find one. Okay, here's one right here. The AMC Javelin is a pony car, but it's not considered a muscle car because only the AMX variation or big block V8s are considered muscle cars. Now, the AMC AMX was a muscle car.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. I mean, it's again, here's another one. Plymouth Barracuda that we talked about before, because remember, only the Cuda models were considered the muscle car. So in every division of muscle car, there's going to be this controversy, was it or wasn't it? And some people say yes, some people will say no. I guess one of the more dramatic examples would be, and I don't know if this is really a controversy or not, but the 1970 Chevrolet Chevelle. It was a mid-sized family car, but the base model had a four-cylinder engine in it, which kind of, I don't know, small for that size vehicle, of course. But you could get the Chevelle with a 454, which was, again, 454 cubic inches,
okay,
big engine. That was considered a muscle car because, you know, that's a version of a vehicle that has a much larger V8 stuffed into it that normally would have a smaller power plant.
Okay.
Now, GTO played on this. They GTO had a huge engine in it. I don't have the information in front of me. I apologize, but the GTO is one of these that a lot of people consider the first muscle car, and Pontiac actually only thought they were going to sell, I think I saw a number of 5,000. Pontiac said they were only going to sell 5,000 GTOs that first year. Guess how many they sold because of this whole muscle car excitement.
Okay. I will take a guess. I know it's more than 5,000. I don't think I have a lifeline.
No peeking in my notes.
I will stop looking at your notes.
You're trying. I see.
I was trying. I was trying through the microphone screen.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. 10,000? 8,000?
32,450 was the number I saw.
32,000.
Yeah, as from an estimated 5,000 that they had anticipated selling. So you're talking about just this craze that was happening. These people had to have these cars. I mean, and it's you see a lot of them around still. I mean, they're all over the place. Not as many here as there are in Michigan, but I guess there's good reason for that.
Yeah, I imagine.
Built them wanted to buy them as well.
Well, also employee discounts.
Yeah. I think employee discounts had anything to do with it. Maybe. I don't know. You know, I shouldn't say for sure. But then I guess the 70s came around and they went away.
Oh, man. Which we have to ask, why did the muscle car disappear?
I was hoping you would ask that, Ben. There are three very good reasons that the muscle cars went away. The first one, the Clean Air Act of 1970, EPA standards, that required pollution control devices be applied to vehicles, and that wasn't the case prior to this. So horsepower went way down. The pollution control devices were installed by the factory, of course, on these cars, and they just weren't putting out the power that they would have before. They were restricted.
And these were not just catalytic converters or anything.
That's part of it, but it's more than that. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, they were running leaner. There's a variety of things that, you know, the Clean Air Act of 1970, check it out, there's a lot to it. That's one of the reasons. Then there was the oil embargo of 1973.
Ooh.
Yeah. That was bad. There was limited supply of gasoline. That's where you saw the people camped out waiting for fuel. They had the odd-even system, I think, with their license plates.
Yeah.
You know, same way we do water restrictions now, you know, odd-even addresses. They did it with gasoline and, odd-even license plates the day they could buy gasoline. And there was a restriction to the amount of gasoline you could buy in those days as well. And you know those cars were fuel-hungry cars. They weren't very efficient, and this is part of, you know, all of this built up to, you know, the car going away, the muscle car going away. The last thing, kind of the nail in the coffin, would be the, and this is touchy right now, this is the CAFE standards, but these were in 1978. The first time that manufacturers had to, meet these standards was in 1978, and that really, really cut into the muscle car production.
And break down real quick what the CAFE standards are.
Sure, that's corporate average fuel economy.
Okay.
And that means that, you know, the across the board, all vehicles have to average a certain miles per gallon. It doesn't matter if it's a truck, car, you know, whatever, bus, whatever you make. They all have to have an average of a certain number, a target number. And if you've got a car that's, you know, getting 4 miles per gallon, but it's really fast, you know, great, but that takes your average fuel economy way down. So they wanted to make more fuel-efficient vehicles that would have higher fuel economy, and that would help them out on other vehicles that are maybe a little less.
I see.
So you're averaging this big pool of vehicles into one number, and these muscle cars were just too much. You know, they were gobbling up the gas too fast, I guess.
Yeah, and if they were in large productions, then that would really bring the average down.
That's right, and we're gonna see a lot of that happening in the near future too with these latest fuel economy standards. We're gonna see some of the cars that, you know, the performance cars that we're accustomed to now, because we're kind of in this resurgence of cars like this. You know, we've got the Challenger, we've got this whole SRT line of vehicles, we've got Mustangs that, you know, look like the Mustangs of the past.
Mm-hmm.
There's the new Camaro, and all these have big V8 engines that are really thirsty. And, you know, but, the, you know, to be honest, they've got pretty good mileage. However, they do bring the corporate average fuel economy down. If you look at, you know, if they could replace that vehicle with a much smaller, or that engine rather, with a much smaller engine and get a little bit better fuel economy.
Sure.
It helps them on something like a truck, where the trucks only get 14 miles per gallon.
Or even if they replace an entire line with something that's a hybrid.
Yeah.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, I hope not, Ben. But,
yeah.
You know, because I hate to see something like this go. I mean, because the new versions of the older cars that we're seeing now, you know, these pony cars.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're seeing on the road, you might see a Challenger, a Camaro, and a Mustang that look like they came from the 60s or 70s. All together at the same time, and they're brand new vehicles. To me, that's pretty exciting. I've seen them on, you know, magazine covers recently.
Sure.
A lot like that. That's a popular cover right now. But I hope that they don't go away. I hope that, you know, they scale back or do something that, you know, mm-hmm. they can keep them around at least and kind of weather this.
Now, you know, I can't let the show end without asking. I know it's a loaded question since we said there's so much controversy. The first muscle car could have been in 1949. The last one could have been in 1978.
Mm-hmm. 74.
74.
Oh, I guess, you know what? You're right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to
step
on either.
No.
But I've seen one listed as 1974, but with the range, somebody has said 1978. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know what vehicle they're talking about in 1978, but that mm-hmm. could have been the last of them because of the... because of the CAFE standards.
I see. Okay, and so our numbers match up.
Sorry, I ruined your groove there.
No, you ruined my groove, man. You know, high-speed stuff is all groove all day. We're doing this. But okay, what's the first one? What's the consensus?
The consensus on the first one? Well, there is no consensus.
Oh, yeah, what are the majority factions?
Okay, well, some people say that it was the GTO, the Pontiac GTO.
Okay.
And that would have been the early 60s. What year? Well, you're stumping me. Sorry, I didn't write it down.
Oh no, that's
card
that's...
doesn't say, Bob. No, I forget. I don't have the GTO dates.
We can ballpark.
I cannot believe it. Okay, anyways, let's move on. The first one, going back to the 40s, and this is going to be a surprise, really.
Okay.
An Oldsmobile, something called the Rocket 88, which where they just stuffed a big V8 into a relatively lightweight coupe. And that was in 1949, and really that does fit the definition of what a muscle car is, because you're taking a giant engine, you're putting mm-hmm. it in something that normally didn't have that.
Okay.
And at a relatively low cost.
Yeah, but at a very early time.
And it's factory. That's the other thing behind this whole thing, is that you're talking factory performance, because when muscle cars came around, this is, you know, again, we've got all those ranges, but when muscle cars came around, there were hot rods. Hot rods had always been there. I mean, people had always been tinkering with their cars and
sure.
taking them to customizers. But you got to imagine that that's pretty expensive as it is now.
Yeah.
It's costly to take your vehicle to someone and have them upgrade it or update it. But this was factory offered low dollar performance. And that's really what a muscle car is all about.
And I think that works, because from the invention of high performance autos, the majority of car buyers cannot afford, you know, a Bugatti.
No. You're talking supercar performance and price.
Right.
And, it's just out of the reach of most people. So this was something that, you know, kind of the everyman could have and enjoy.
And we hope that this can continue with the modern resurgence. So we might need to keep an eye on the way the fuel economy standards affect the modern muscle car.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The modern version of the muscle car.
And please, somebody write in and tell me the date of the first GTO, because I'm embarrassed, but please do it, and it would help me, and I will I'll read it on there.
We would love to congratulate you on air, you guys.
I've turned bright red here,
Scott. Yeah, Scott is cherry red here. He knows a lot about autos, and gets
not enough apparently.
Oh, come on, you're way too hard on yourself.
You know, my uncle had a GTO that he used to talk about. We're getting into. Let's take one more minute, and I'm going to tell you this. My uncle had a GTO, and it had, I think it was called. He had three double barrel carbs on it, and I guess it was just the fastest car around. I mean, it was just, he loved that car. Talked about it all the time.
Yeah.
I had a Trans Am when I was, that was my first car.
Oh, wow.
Trans
cool,
Am. Now,
man.
It wasn't really a muscle car because it was a 1978 Trans Am, but it did have a 400 cubic inch engine, and it had a four barrel carb. And I'll tell you, the thing about that was that it wasn't necessarily fast off the line. It was quick, you know, it was powerful, but it was so fast between, let's say, like 60 and 100 or 120 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Super fast. I mean, you couldn't keep up with me between those speeds. It was like the second set of barrels would open up and man, it would go. I mean, it would press you back in the seat as long as you kept your foot on the pedal.
That's crazy.
It was fun. A lot of fun.
Do you still have it? Do you want to sell it?
I do not have it. No, it's long gone. I'm sure it's probably soup cans or something by now.
Oh, man, yeah. Come on. Now, maybe we can close on this. Where should people go if they want to learn more about muscle cars?
Oh, well, they can come to our site. We've got a ton of material about muscle cars. But, just comb the web. You're able to find information from the manufacturers, because a lot of them will have history sections where they'll talk about the muscle car history from their own perspective. And that's pretty interesting. But enthusiast sites are, the place to go. Aside from the How Stuff Works articles we've got, and I think even Consumer Guide has some of the stuff on used vehicles, that you may want to read. But really, go to some of these enthusiast sites and these car club sites. You'll find the best information. Just talk to some people, some older mechanics, and see what they say.
Awesome. I bet that's probably talking to older mechanics is a great way to do it. Yeah. So to our listeners there, before you guys forget, just want to mention again that Scott officially, and this was your idea, we didn't talk about this, Scott officially has invited you to write an email to us with the date of the GTO, right?
and you know what? I'll probably get several different responses the way this category is.
Yeah, way things are shaping up.
Yeah, I know, the way that there's just controversy abounds in this category, so we'll see.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. The email is highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota bZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.